Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The term strategic autonomy sounds good. The word strategic conjures up a sense of importance, and autonomy presents a sense of independence. But when you consider the French president using this term, then we're forced to wonder if he is a serious person. After all, Europe is no longer strategic or autonomous. Crosstalking strategic autonomy, I'm joined by my guest, Alfred Desaias, in Geneva. He is an author and a former UN independent expert on international order. In Paris, we have John Lachlan. He is a university lecturer in history and political philosophy. And in Washington, we cross to Matthew Crosston. He is director of academic transformation at Bowie State University. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. John, let me go to you in Paris. I mean, you and I have known each other, and you've been on this program as long as the French president Macron has been in office, and you and I have pointed out a number of times that inner de Gaulle trying to fight its way out of him. Sometimes he gets de Gaulle curious, but I don't take him seriously anymore, because even when he says those kind of things, the next day he says something different. I think that is really emblematic of Europe's place in the world today. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I mean, the big difference between Emmanuel Macron and Charles de Gaulle, there are so many of them, is that de Gaulle would never have talked about European autonomy. De Gaulle talked about French autonomy. He understood that autonomy can only be national, and that any European dimension, by definition, was incompatible with autonomy. Macron doesn't understand that. Macron thinks that there can be such a thing as European autonomy. He occasionally, as you said in your question, Peter, he occasionally says that. But actually, there are contradictions in terms. And we saw this, for instance, when he went to China, because he took Ursula von der Leyen with him. That was supposed to show that he was coming as a representative of Europe. But between him and Ursula von der Leyen, there are very substantial differences. She is much more Atlanticist. I mean, he's pretty Atlanticist, but she's even more so. So what him taking her to China showed was that Europe reduces its own autonomy by trying to be a permanent alliance, because everybody pulls in different directions. And the result is the lowest common denominator. And in addition to the fact, of course, that, as we all know, the European project, including the military dimension of it, is entirely an American creation and entirely under the control of the Americans. So these are just words. And I've used this quotation once before on this program, but I think one can repeat myself every other year or so. The problem about Macron is the same as Ada Gardner. Deep down, he's very superficial.
Yeah, Alfred, you know, I mean, and trying to, you know, in most of the world, they're talking about multipolarity, the rise of the global south, the global majority. And it seems like the French president and others like him are relying upon old tropes that really don't make any sense anymore. And nobody really takes seriously anymore. For example, NATO is expanded. NATO is more powerful. No, I think it just made Washington more powerful, not the alliance per se. So, I mean, they're all chasing the wrong rabbits down the wrong rabbit hole. Alfred.
Yes, you are absolutely right, and I absolutely agree with John. Now, I'd like to see the analysis of Dr. Cochrane, but as the case may be, from my perspective as a former UN staffer and as a former rapporteur, it is quite clear that the Europeans live in their bubble. We are actually a small clique. The Europeans and the Americans, the global majority, is against us. And we are actually isolating ourselves even further. It's not just Macron and his, well, you know, empty posturing in China. I think that the G7 meeting now of the foreign ministers is actually a hallmark of how isolated, basically, we in the West are vis-a-vis the rest of the world, vis-a-vis the Belt and Road Initiative, vis-a-vis the fact that most countries in the world have refused to impose sanctions on Russia, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a question of perception of reality, but in our fanaticism, in our self-righteousness, our perception of reality is totally distorted. And I'm not optimistic that it's going to change anytime soon. I'd like to see the Europeans realize that the United States is not its friend. The United States is not an asset. The United States is actually a liability. The United States' interests and those of the Europeans do not coincide. But again, there is an elite, and for the elite, it does coincide.
Well, if there were any kind of democratic impulse left in Europe, we might see a different direction, but I'm not counting on that here. Matthew, one of the things, Alfred was pointing out real things, Belt Road, okay, trade, diversifying from the dollar. But the Europeans and the Americans talk about ideology all the time, and I can't make any heads or tails of what they're talking about. I need a translator. I don't know what they're talking about. And that's why most of the world is turning away. Ukraine, that's your problem. You made it. You fix it. What do you want from us? Oh, and we remember hundreds of years of you telling us what to do, and it didn't work out too well for us. Okay? I mean, how tone deaf can you be, Matthew?
What I love in the commentary that we've had so far is the fact that there are pieces that we're touching upon that I think really back up. For me, I'm not as, I won't say cynical, that's too strong. But when Macron talks about strategic autonomy, what amazes me is the fact that I think the United States has always utilized strategic autonomy. If we really break down what strategic autonomy is in real terms, what the United States doesn't like about Macron using that term is the idea that you're simply comparing it, to use that bubble analogy that was just mentioned. These are power bubbles, right? These are bubbles of power that the United States controls. And now Macron, with that one phrase, strategic autonomy, he's at least winking at the idea that there could be a Chinese power bubble that might serve interests in Europe as forcefully or as powerfully as American ones are. And that has always infuriated the Americans. The Americans are the only ones, and I've always found this fascinating, is the fact that they will live ideologically in terms of how they speak before the diplomatic microphones and how they act in corridors of power in other nations' capitals. But in terms of actual real-term efforts, they will always follow what their national interests are. But they don't want other countries to be able to follow those same.
Well, I think maybe in theory, but I mean, John, I mean, you know, I don't want to have this turn into my favorite hobby horse, but Nord Stream 2, I mean, that's kind of a physical, real thing, okay, that's being denied Europe, okay? That goes beyond, doublespeak, one in public, one in private here. My point is, John, here is that the Europeans have given up almost all of the leverage that they have to actually have some kind of autonomy. John.
Well, I think that's because they're afraid. Again, I've said this before on your show. They can see what the Americans are capable of doing, including to them. And they're afraid that if they were to call the Americans out on Nord Stream, that there would be further attacks. So that's the reality of the alliance. It's in fact not an alliance at all. It's a mafia system of protection. I think that explains the extremely dysfunctional behavior of European politicians. There's no other rational explanation other than that they are afraid. That's what makes all talk of autonomy completely bogus. It's the talk of autonomy in Macron's mouth, on Macron's lips, is simply intended to convince a largely skeptical French audience of the continuing usefulness of the European Union and to pretend that somehow France can project herself as a world power within that framework. In reality, of course, even those old dreams from the 1950s and 60s are unraveling. We're seeing an incredible geopolitical shift within Europe, thanks to American support, from Germany to Poland. Poland is now the main ally of the United States in Europe. Poland is the gas hub because it opened its Norwegian pipeline the day after the Nord Stream 2 was blown up by the Americans. Poland wants to recreate, and indeed has in the form of some structures, recreated a sort of intermarium, a sort of Polish-Lithuanian commonwealth, a sort of glacis against Russia. Poland has presented a 1.6 trillion bill for the Second World War to Germany, and so on and so on. And in that context, France is totally marginalized, as is Germany for that matter. So all this is simply intended to corral a increasingly skeptical French public opinion back into some support for the European project, which, as everybody knows, is itself completely bogus.
Yeah, well, Alfred, you know, it's interesting about what you can say and what you can't say, okay? And there are plenty of people that would like to see more French autonomy, European autonomy, and I like the distinction that John has made here. But there's a lot of other people in the elites that say, hey, we're pretty high in the pecking order in the empire. Things are going great for us. And Alina Baerbock, she's doing great in this paradigm. I mean, this for me, is one of the things that I want to talk about in the second half of the program, is that so much of this is elite and ideologically driven. Alfred, before we go to the break, go ahead.
Yeah, democracy. If you ask the French people, if you ask the German people, they will tell you they don't want this. And they will tell you they want negotiation. They don't want to send more weapons to Ukraine, notwithstanding what you might read in Le Monde or Le Figaro or in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. I speak with people, real people, and I don't find anyone who's excited about sending more weapons to Ukraine or about joining the campaign against China and giving up on the one China policy. That's all extremely dangerous, and the Europeans have to stay away from this Taiwan conundrum. I would propose referenda. Ask the people.
Alfred, don't you know, Alfred, there's too much democracy in the West. It's just too dangerous for democracy. That's why the newest members of NATO, they don't have referenda. No, because it's too dangerous here. Gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on strategic autonomy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing strategic autonomy. Okay, let's go back to Matthew in Washington. Matthew, before we started our recording here, I was talking privately with John, and I kind of lamented that myself, and I think John included, or maybe all of us, are forced to talk about politics when most of us would love to talk about culture and society. And that's how I kind of look at these elites here, because they have cultural affinities, social affinities. When you listen to European foreign ministers traveling, they talk about ideas, they talk about what kind of society they want and the creating the new human condition. They don't really talk about what's good for Italy or good for Netherlands, good for France, good for Germany. They talk about themselves. They talk about their elite and their elite ideas, which, of course, are superior to the people that that vote for them. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, I think that's very true, but I also think that sometimes what's missed, especially in terms of the narrative that gets pushed in the United States, is that there's also a hierarchy within the elite itself.
Yep.
And the Americans push very hard to make sure everyone is very clear that at the top of that elite hierarchy is the American elitology, for lack of a better term. And they want to make people understand. And that's why I come from a national security intelligence background. So I don't really look at it ideationally when Macron talks about strategic autonomy. I see it much more from the practical reality of saying, we're not comfortable with how the United States has largely, basically, through this conflict in Ukraine, told all of Europe, where else are you going to go? You have us and you have no one else. There is no other legitimate idea. There is no other legitimate alliance that you can rely on. And therefore, he's manipulating the phrase almost to me in a term of almost making it de facto like classical neutrality, which is, I'm going to pursue our interests wherever they may lead us, and I'm not automatically aligning with you on every single issue just because you're at the top of that elite pyramid. That's what I think what infuriates the Americans so much.
Yeah, well, John, that's kind of like from the Sopranos, you know, that you have the Biden administration say, that's kind of a nice presidential palace you have there in France. You know, would be a pity if something happened to it. I mean, this is exactly what it is. I do agree with Matthew that it's very hierarchical. Everything is hierarchical, okay, everything. But what I find fascinating and deplorable is that there are so many people that bow down to this hierarchy and think it's a good gig for them. I mean, just because you're prime minister of a European country, that's not the end of your career. That's just the beginning, okay? I mean, it's all towards a grift, okay? And you get away with it by siding with, you know, the right side of history, the great Americans, you know, liberalism. They have all of these covers for their own self-interest because dealing with the nitty-gritty of fixing roads and having water quality, that's boring. John.
Well, again, I think the concept of ideology that you introduced in your questions earlier is very important. You know, 20 years after the end of the invasion of Iraq, it seems as if George W. Bush were still in power. You're either with us or against us. You know, there's no concept anymore in the Western mindset for negotiation, for diplomacy, for compromise. Instead, all the strategic documents, for instance, of NATO itself, are indeed formulated in highly ideological terms. There's a lot of stuff about values. There's a lot of stuff about authoritarian regimes, which somehow threaten us and so on. And Macron, of course, made his remark partly because he wants to sell a lot of Airbuses to China. And so he was trying to soften up Chinese opinion, which is ultimately fair enough. But the fact is that he himself has gone far too far down the ideological route. Yeah. Be able to speak about any kind of strategic autonomy with any conviction. You said you wanted to talk about society and culture instead of talking about politics. But one of the depressing things about life, I would say, in Europe today is that there aren't any cultural or social spheres left anymore, which are independent of politics. You know, Vladimir Zelensky speaks at the Venice Biennale. He speaks at the Cannes Film Festival. He speaks at the Frankfurt Book Fair. He speaks at the Glastonbury Festival. There are no cultural events left where politics does not intervene. Or for that matter, where LGBT rights or whatever intervene as well. There are no more autonomous fields left, and therefore we are in Europe in a situation very similar to that which existed in the Soviet Union, communism, where everything had to be brought back to Marxism. In Europe today, everything has to be brought back to postmodernism and to the associated values. And Macron, of course, himself is an absolute pure product of that phenomenon.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Zelensky appearing at all those venues. I'm sure his checks are cashed all across Europe without a problem. Okay, remember Chiang Kai-shek? Remember, his nickname was Cash My Check. We have to find a Ukrainian version, Cash My Check. Alfred, you know, we're very pessimistic here right now because I don't see any tools or any ideas or a cadre that can actually shake things up. It really seems that Europe has straitjacketed itself to Washington. That's not a bet I would take. I mean, because if you look at the Middle East, but China's initiatives, I mean, peace is breaking out all over the place, and the Americans have no control over it apparently at all. I see which arc of history I would like to be on. I'd like to be on the side of peace, Alfred.
Well, of course. But it's amazing that all our think tanks, whether it be the Brookings or the Heritage Foundation, that they have not realized that we ourselves are cutting ourselves off from the rest of the world, and that the Belt and Road Initiative and everything else is passing us over. Now, the main problem that I see in the West, and that includes Switzerland, where I live, is the mainstream media. The mainstream media is brainwashing, is indoctrination, and two books come to mind, Brave New World of Aldous Huxley, and of course, 1984 of George Orwell. We live in that dystopia, and I don't see any awakening right now. Thank God there is something called Consortium News and Counterpunch and Truth Out and the Real News Network and Intercept. Thank God there's still Sputnik and RT and CGTN and Asia Times and the Global Times, etc. But that is for us who actually go out of our way to get the information and get different narratives and try to evaluate. But the masses, they just turn on the television and they watch CNN, and that's all they get. And that is the problem. If you have a democracy where the entire population has been indoctrinated into believing, as a matter of faith, that we are the good guys, believing that we have the right to do what we're doing. I mean, we have locked ourselves into this situation in which it's very difficult to get out.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Penning themselves into a corner. Matthew, I want to take advantage of your past professionalism here. Can you comment, if you want, on these document leaks? What do you make of it? Because, I mean, it's very interesting how some are using it to shift narratives, change perspectives on Ukraine and other things like that. And I've talked to a lot of people in the intelligence community, mostly retired, and most of them just kind of scratch their heads over it. What do you think of it?
There's just, obviously, for my line of work, this is sort of occupying the front end of the desk at the moment, since it's plastered everywhere within the United States and people are fascinated by it. There are practical aspects that probably go beyond what we're talking about or maybe seem small potatoes in the bigger discussions we're having right here. But I think it is starting to show some regular, quote unquote, regular citizens in America that there is definitely a problem in the United States in terms of the categorization of clearances. We have far too many people that get clearances, security clearances, within our governmental military intelligence communities. And we're seeing, because of who did the leaks and why that person did the leaks.
Well, okay, Matthew, let me jump to the chase here. How did this kid get these kinds of documents? That's the question. And are they real? Okay.
Oh, I think they're real, okay. Because that's the thing is, people too often want to take the Hollywood version they get fed a lot in terms of the intelligence community. We have 1.4 million people with security clearances in the United States, and not all of them are senior officials with decades of experience. We have too many documents that get classified. In order to process them, we end up with people like the individual that did the leaking with access to documents that... Now, the thing I'd want to push back on is the idea of just how powerful were these documents that he actually leaked onto his gamer site, right? I mean, there were some embarrassing things there, to be sure. But the idea that, well, I don't know if Taiwan is ready for a Chinese incursion militarily, or if we don't keep doing what we're doing in Ukraine could end up facing real stark consequences.
Matthew, you bring up a very interesting...
These are not secrets.
You bring up a very interesting point, because in the discussions I've had with people is that if you really put your nose to the grindstone and looked at all, you know, the UAE, for example, like that, none of these documents say anything particularly new, okay? But they're being presented as some kind of splash. Okay, I want to kind of shift gears because we're almost running out of time here. But, John... What is the feeling in France? I mean, we had this pension reform here. I suppose that, you know, Macron did pull a De Gaulle and just had got it done his own way here. What kind of pressures are people feeling as this conflict in Ukraine continues, when the prospects are very bleak for NATO, irrespective of all the propaganda that people are being fed? 45 seconds to you, my friend.
Well, I'm afraid I think France is no different from anywhere else. I think there is a mass media problem that Alfred de Zayas mentioned. And while there may be a higher degree of understanding for Russia in France than in other countries, I don't think France is substantially different. The worst predictions have not come true. I have to say, there haven't been power cuts in France. There hasn't been serious hardship, just as the worst predictions haven't come true for Russia either.
Right.
So
right.
In a way, it's off the news, and people instead are worried about, pension reform, as you say. The Ukraine thing is not really at the top of the agenda at the moment. It's dragging on. And I think that's probably part of Russia's own strategy. I think Russia knows that there will be war fatigue pretty soon, if not already.
All of the naysayers that I've had over the last 15 months, I've said the same thing here. Different sides have different agendas and timeframes. Who's got the clocks and who's got the time? All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Paris, Switzerland, and in Washington. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.